I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Jane Lindholm. Even among an eclectic field of candidates seeking the Democratic Party nomination to run for governor of Vermont this year, Ethan Sonneborn stands out. The reason is simple. He is by far the youngest primary candidate in the field, so young, in fact, that he is not even legally eligible to drive. Ethan Sonneborn is 14 years old, but his desire to run is not a joke or a gimmick, and because the Vermont Constitution has no minimum age requirement to run for the state's highest office, his candidacy is as valid as any other in the field of hopefuls. As part of our series of interviews with candidates seeking statewide and federal office this election year, Ethan Sonneborn joins me now in our VPR studios in Colchester. Ethan, welcome. Thanks so much for being here.
Glad to be with you.
So, Ethan, I promise we are going to get to the issues that you care about, but by now you must realize that your age is in itself an issue. You're not legally old enough to vote for yourself. You can't legally drive, drink alcohol, own a gun, all the stuff I'm sure you've heard 1,000 times before already when you announced your candidacy. But why, assuming that your candidacy is not just a lark, are you running to become governor of Vermont?
I think that my message transcends age. I think what people are looking for in the state's new leadership for the state is ideas that we haven't heard before. And I think that no matter who the politician is, there are generational norms with the current generation that overwhelmingly is in power in politics. And so I think new ideas from a new generation, it doesn't hurt the discourse. And I think it's important that we talk about what really matters to the future. We can talk all day about things that are happening right now, and they're important. But what we need are long-term solutions. And I think that somebody from a new generation of leadership is prepared to offer those long-term solutions.
Now, we had a recent VPR Vermont PBS poll. And in that poll, one of the findings was that Democratic candidates in this year's primary are having a real name recognition problem. Former Vermont Electric Cooperative CEO Christine Hallquist has the highest name recognition, but that's just at 41% among the people that were surveyed. Can you see how the other three Democratic candidates may be somewhat resentful that your candidacy, because of the novelty of you being a teenager, makes it even harder for them to gain any kind of voter awareness?
I don't work for my opponent's campaigns, so I don't think it's my job to make their campaigns easier. I'm certainly running a positive campaign. I'm not trying to make their campaigns harder. But my campaign is a legitimate attempt to win. And the poll findings show two things. One, we need more people involved in the process. We need more people who care about who is running for office and who is going to represent them. And two, Christine Hallquist is a little bit of ahead of everyone else, but the three others, myself included, we're pretty much on par. This is not a settled race, and we're very clearly contenders here. That's what the poll taught me.
I'm really curious about that moment, if there was one, kind of an aha moment when you decided, you know what, I want to do this. I want to run for governor. What was there any one particular issue, any one thing that got you kind of riled up and said, this is important. I want to do this.
It was a culmination of a lot of things. I felt like we have dismal voter participation rates in this country among every age group. I mean, some are better than others, but we needed somebody who could run a campaign. I think this is the moral thing to do, and I think it's smart politics to get more people involved in the process, to get more people out to vote, to get more people volunteering for candidates. And I felt like we weren't seeing that. I felt like politicians in both parties were more focused on re-election with the voters who are already in the system than getting new people into the system. And I felt a frustration with politics as usual, both on the state level and the national level. So I really considered running for a long time. I really struggled with it. After the tragic events in Charlottesville, I began to recognize that somebody from a new generation of leadership needed to step up and take action on these issues that mattered to me.
Is part of this, too, the fact that young people traditionally don't vote in as large numbers as older people do?
That's definitely a part of it. I think that if I can get even one more young person out to vote in the primary or in the general election, then my campaign will have been a success.
What did your parents say when you told them you wanted to do this?
I don't think they were surprised.
Really?
They – from a very early age, I've wanted to be in public service. I've been an activist. I've worked within my community to make changes that I thought were important to make. And I always wanted to run for office. I always felt like that was the best way I could help people. And so they might have been taken aback a little bit at first, but that I was starting so early, but they weren't surprised, no.
Have you ever run for student government, anything within your school?
Yes. I've been in student government most of my school career.
So you have run before and successfully, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you've had some kind of experience with running for office.
Something like that.
It's not quite at the level of Vermont's highest office, but it's there. We did get this question from Alexander, who emailed us, Ethan, and said, my question for Ethan is, why do you think you are fit to be governor and what makes you a better choice than the other candidates?
I think that no governor does their job alone. Any of the Democratic candidates, they're not going to go it alone. They wouldn't even know how to start. And I think it's the governor's job to think big picture. And so I think I'm fit to be governor because I'm presenting this choice. We can get beyond traditional politicians. We don't have to do the, 70-year-old who's been in politics his entire life and has never experienced the struggles of working or middle-class families. And I think I'm a better choice. I have a lot of respect for all the other Democratic candidates. I like them all. I have a unique perspective. I live the issues I talk about. I live the public education issue. I live the gun safety issue. I live the economic issue. And I think that's something that really resonates with voters, that regardless of my age, we need a governor who represents the people who elected them.
We do have to walk this through, though. Let's say you win the Democratic primary. Let's say you go on to win the governor's office. And I think you would agree with me, perhaps. I hope I'm not overstepping my bounds here by saying that would be a long shot. I mean, do you see your candidacy that way?
I see my candidacy as legitimate, but I do understand that we face an uphill battle. I think lots of other candidates who face uphill battles significantly overperform expectations, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in New York or even Bernie Sanders in the 2016 Democratic primary.
Those are both very telling examples for sure. But let's say you did win. You would then be required to go to school for 9 months of the year. I mean, you'd be the governor and you'd still be going to school, doing homework, taking tests, doing all that stuff. I mean, have you thought through about the enormity of that happenstance?
I've spoken with some experts in the educational field. It's a bridge we'd cross when we get there. It would probably involve some sort of homeschooling or tutoring. I would be a full-time governor, and my education would still be important, but it would have to not occur during business hours. It's not an insurmountable challenge, at least according to the educational experts I've spoken with.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Federico on the line from Greensboro. Hi, Federico.
Hello. I just a brief comment. I'd like to. I don't know what the chances are for Ethan to become like a governor, but no matter what, the fact is stands that he is like setting an example for my young kids in Vermont and around the country, given the apathy of the American people towards voting, especially people. Ethan is like an example of the, how the things should be done. And I just wanted to acknowledge that and thank you for that.
Thank you, Federico. I think we have a tough, tough line to hear you there. But if I did hear you correctly, you were saying that you think Ethan is actually showing a good example for young people. And I have to imagine that that is has a lot to do with your candidacy, Ethan, and that you want to get more young people at least involved in politics, even if they're like your age and they can't legally vote. You're setting kind of the stage. Is that right?
I like to think I'm helping. We've seen a wave of youth activism in the last 2 years. I think I'm a very small part of that, but I think I'm also a public part of that, which I think is helpful to the movement of getting more people. People of all ages, but especially young people, are ready to be politically engaged.
You just finished eighth grade at Bristol's Mount Abraham Union Middle and High School. Is that correct?
That is correct.
What are your classmates and your friends saying to you about this?
Well, a lot of them work on my campaign. So
really? You can't afford to pay them. I imagine this is all volunteer basis.
It is volunteer. My classmates are supportive because regardless of if they agree with my politics, I think everybody recognizes that Congress and, you know, even the Vermont State Legislature to an extent is not truly representative of the state. I know that the average age to be a member of the United States House of Representatives is 58 or 59. The average age to be a senator is in your mid-60s.
I mean, that's what the average of people who are elected are. They're not legally required to be that old.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what you see. That's the national trend. Yeah.
Right. That's
yeah.
the trend. And I think my classmates recognize that they want to be represented in this crucial time in our nation's history.
I should mention, too, that you are actually not alone in this. In Kansas, apparently, there are six teenagers running for governor in that state. They have no legal age attached to the office, just like that is here in Vermont. Why do you think it is that other young people your age are coming to this kind of decision? I mean, what's happening here?
I know that only one of the teenagers in Kansas is a Democrat, which means that this is happening with young Republicans also. I think there is more youth activism. I don't think you can pin it on any one thing. I don't think you can say young people are fed up with Donald Trump. I don't think you can say young people are fed up with Congress. I don't think you can say young people are fed up with the average age of a politician. I think what you can say is politics is polarized, more so than it's ever been, and people are – the silver lining of that polarization is that everyone is exposed to the political process at some point, hopefully at a young age.
You mentioned before that you care about middle class issues. You're running as a Democrat. Why do you identify with the Democratic Party?
The Democratic Party has made serious missteps, both in its history as the more conservative party in the United States and now when our strategy feels too – it feels like we can't agree on a strategy. But beyond the Democratic Party's flaws, I know what it's supposed to be. It is the party of middle and working class families. It is the party of making sure that everybody makes a living wage. It's the party of ensuring that no matter who you are or where you come from or who your parents are, you have a chance to be successful. And those are still Democratic Party core values. And I think that we need to work to rediscover those core values. Because we can't win elections by saying, I'm not Donald Trump. Donald Trump might not be popular. He's not here. The VPR poll showed that. But that's not a plan. It's not a policy. So the Democratic Party has work to do for sure. But I am a proud Democrat because I understand what the party should be and I understand the direction it's moving.
Tyler is on the line with us from Williston. Hi, Tyler. You're on Vermont Edition with Ethan Sonneborn.
Hey, Ethan. Got a question for you. Why would you think that it's okay to put school kind of on the back burner as you're going to go for your candidacy? I mean, it seems like just listening to your public speaking skills, the ums and things like that are really kind of coming through and we can really hear it in your speeches.
Public education would not be on the back burner. I think that the priority of the governor should be to be governor. And within business hours, that would be my job. I would pursue an education, absolutely. I'm not dropping out of school or anything. But my education would happen not in a traditional schooling environment and not in a traditional way. It would probably happen before or after business hours as governor, and it would my school schedule would be built around my gubernatorial schedule.
Did you have any concerns about what Tyler just mentioned, you know, talking about things like umming and aahing, public speaking? I mean, do you get scared talking in public, things like that?
I don't, no. I think that I have a message that I want to share, and I don't think that people are I don't think that it's all that important, the specifics, the umming and the aahing. What I think is important is the comprehensive, coherent message.
Yeah, I noticed that you like to take a pause, and folks obviously can't see you, but you're thinking about things with those pauses. I can see the sort of the wheels turning, you know, as you're trying to think through the question. So that must be part of what you're talking about here. So you're thinking about these things pretty deeply.
I do try to answer the question thoughtfully.
Ethan, one of the things I'm curious about with your candidacy is how the fundraising effort is going. All candidates need to raise money. I think VPR's Peter Hirschfeld reported that as of mid-March, you'd raised just over $600. Obviously, not a lot of money, not as much as the other candidates. Are you relying on any social media presence to supplement this sort of thing?
So as of the most recent reporting period, which was July 15th, we had about as much cash on hand as James Ellers and Brenda Siegel. We have raised close to $1,700 at that point, which was a notable improvement from March. And I intend to it's still not enough to run a viable statewide general election campaign. But in a primary campaign in Vermont, which is unfortunately likely to be very low turnout, $1,700 goes a long way. And every single one of my donations has come from individual donors. I haven't started courting donors. I've only given them the link if they would like to donate. But I will kick off an aggressive fundraising effort should I win the nomination.
What about things like going door to door, you know, rolling up the sleeves, doing that that classic candidate walking the beat sort of thing?
I've gotten out and I've met a lot of voters. Even beyond my age, the thing they all care about is they care about real issues. They care about healthcare. They care about jobs. They care about education. And I think that they're willing to look past my age because they see that I have a comprehensive platform on these issues.
When you meet somebody face to face and you say, I'm running for governor of Vermont, is there that moment that you have to get past? Maybe you're used to this already where they kind of say, what? You know, you can't be more than 14, 15 years old.
That moment happens occasionally. Vermont is overwhelmingly an open-minded and progressive state. And I've gotten very little in person, anyway, criticism of my campaign. There have been people who have been skeptical, but I think I've done a good job reassuring those people that I'm a legitimate candidate with real ideas on how to make Vermont stronger.
We've got Devin on the line from South Burlington. Hi, Devin. You're on with Ethan Sonneborn.
Hi, I'm just calling to disagree with the previous caller who attempted to detract from the speaker's political issues by criticizing your pattern of speech. I think that when we have a president who scrapes the garbage bin of linguistic aptitude, I think that you are an absolute paragon and you shouldn't be distracted by that. So keep going and, be encouraged.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call, Devin. I appreciate that. Some issues I want to get to now, Ethan. I promised we would talk about the issues that you care about. And thing I wanted to ask about first is water quality issues in Vermont. There's a lot of problems with the Big Lake and other bodies of water as well. Would you be in favor of a long-term funding source for dealing with these water quality issues? And if so, what would that be?
I think we need to tackle water quality. Water quality impacts every aspect of our lives as Vermonters. And I believe that all these issues are interconnected. Water quality affects the economy, and the economy affects everything else. And I think we need to have plans in place, and then I think we need to have contingency plans in place. We need to be absolutely prepared to clean up our waterways so that they are environmentally safe and safe in terms of infrastructure for drinking water. And I don't think I can speak to where specifically the money for long-term funding would come from right now, but I don't doubt that we can find it because cleaning up waterways, and it's an expensive effort, but the money is there in the budget, I believe. That's the impression I've gotten from professional budget analysts.
Are you in favor of a single-payer health care plan for Vermont?
Yes. I would like to, on day one as governor, I would go to the legislature and say, how can we reform Vermont Health Connect with a public option? Single-payer, I think, will be best streamlined as a federal program. And so if Democrats and Democratic-aligned progressives take the House and Senate in 2018, then I am prepared to give them some time to work on a single-payer healthcare system. I think Medicare for All is the right plan, and I think it has not just an economic benefit, but a moral benefit.
It sounds to me like you have some leanings towards progressive politics, and you're nodding your head. So I'm wondering if you ever thought about running as a progressive instead of as a Democrat.
I have a lot of respect for the Progressive Party. I think they do exceptional work to help to boldly shift the narrative in the direction it should be going. I agree with them on most things. But it's like I said, about the Democratic Party's core values. The Progressive Party is great, and if the Democratic Party were to really lose its way, not just temporarily, not just lose its way for one election, I would be open to considering switching parties. But right now I'm a loyal Democrat because I think we can I still believe in my party.
And you want to strengthen it, it sounds like.
I do.
Rather than abandon it for mm-hmm. a more progressive stance, yeah. We have this question coming in from a user on VPR.net. How would you deal with school safety and protect schools against violence such as school shootings?
I think there are three things we need to do to prevent a school shooting in Vermont. One is mental health. It's been said that the only thing we can do to prevent these is mental health. That's false. But we can improve access to counseling services. We can make it so that you, if you feel isolated from your community, that there are people you can talk to about that. Another thing is school safety infrastructure, making sure we have cameras that can show full bodies outside of schools, and things like making sure that every door is safely locked during the school day. But the third thing, and I think the most important thing, is an assault weapons ban. And, that's controversial. Not as controversial as I would have thought before the VPR poll, but controversial. I think it's just common sense. I respect hunting culture. I have friends who hunt. And I think that we have to we as a state have to decide where our priorities lie. Do our priorities lie with hunting culture, or do they lie with not banning all guns, but banning assault weapons so that our schools can be safe?
Well, what do you think of Governor Phil Scott's recent signing of some new gun restrictions in Vermont?
I think they're absolutely an important step. I'm glad he signed them. I don't think it's fair for him to take credit. He added a signature to the paper after ignoring the bill, essentially, when it was in the legislature. If you're looking for somebody to thank for S-55, you can thank Tim Ash and Mitzi Johnson. Phil Scott got the great publicity. Good for him. But and it is difficult to stand up to your own party. But he didn't do the work on the legislation. He didn't write it. He signed it. And we didn't even know he was going to sign it until soon before or soon after it passed. I think it's an important building block. I think it's a first step. A ban on assault weapons is where we need to go next. And I'm not talking about, you know, knocking down your doors and taking all your guns. But stopping the sale for right now would be enough for me.
It occurs to me that, you know, we're talking about perhaps some people thinking that you're too young to run for this office, et cetera. But when it comes to things like education, these are things that will directly impact you. You are a student. You go to school. What do you think about education funding? Right now it is tied to the property tax. Would you favor a shift from the property tax to tying education to an income tax?
I do support the speaker's plan on shifting the burden on education funding. I think that, you know, I'm not an accountant or a tax expert, but I do understand that we need to make Vermont more affordable. Contrary to what the governor says, it's not the only issue in Vermont, but it is a issue.
What about staff-to-student ratios? The governor favors, you know, having fewer teachers for students as a way to cut down costs.
I think it's important that our schools are well-staffed. I go to a school that has some serious struggles with funding and things like not school shooter safety, but safety in terms of things like architectural integrity. And I think that we need to put the money into education that education needs. We need to hear from teachers and students and administrators on this. And I think the way we do it is I think we cut administrative spending and we put that money into classrooms and into teachers' pockets. Teachers should not be paying for school supplies out of pocket, period.
We have Kelly on the line from Norwich. Hi, Kelly. You're on with Ethan Sonneborn.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm wondering how you feel about protecting LGBTQ marriage in Vermont, and also what you think about the services for mental health in Vermont.
So to answer your first question, I'm a proud supporter of the LGBTQ plus community. It is common sense to me. That it's not the government's job to decide who you can love. It's not the government's job to decide who you can marry. And I would make sure that we have strong employment non-discrimination laws in Vermont and make sure that we are able to say that Vermont is open and welcoming and affirming. Gay marriage is the law of the land, and even if you don't agree with it personally, I do agree with it personally. I have no issue with it. You have to recognize that LGBT plus rights should not be an issue anymore. We know what the precedent is. We know what the law is. And we know what the right thing to do is. And the right thing to do is to recognize that it's not the government's job to regulate happiness. And on the mental health issue, I think mental health is very important. We need to make sure that we are, in the last, 50 years, suicide rates have spiked. And we need to, make sure that nobody in this state is, going at it alone. If you're struggling with a mental illness, we need to make sure that you can get the help you need. And that feels common sense to me. It doesn't feel like it should be a political issue. It should be a personal issue. I have family members who have struggled with mental health. We need to make sure there are counseling services available. We need to make sure there is more short-term help available. And we need to make sure that we are funding programs that can reduce suicide, that can reduce mental illness, because that really does affect everything in our lives.
And Ethan, perhaps related to that briefly, do you think that the state might need to raise taxes to provide any additional services to its residents?
So from what I can see, economic experts are fairly divided on this. I support making sure that middle and working class families can afford to live here in Vermont. And I think that if we need to raise taxes, I would defer to economic experts, like people in the Joint Fiscal Office, an office which the governor's administration takes great joy in attacking. But if we do need to raise taxes, I don't want to do it on middle and working class families. I want to do it on the people who maybe aren't paying their fair share in taxes right now, but can afford to.
And we've been speaking with Democrat Ethan Sonneborn of Bristol. He is one of four registered candidates seeking the party's nomination for governor in Vermont's August 14th primary. Ethan, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and discussing your platform and your bid for governor.
Glad to be with you.